This is a HelpNet Security Podcast, your premier source for information security knowledge.
Hi, I'm Ajay Arora, the CEO and co-founder of Vera Security. I'm here with Melanie. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Melanie Ensign. I am currently on the board of WISP, which is a nonprofit, women in security and privacy. And we are dedicated and really focused on helping more women join the security community and help them advance and develop once they're in the field.
Excellent, excellent. And I know this you're coming about on your year anniversary, correct, in WISP?
Yeah, in a couple months. We're pretty new, but we definitely saw a need for the organization. Just had so many women that were really interested in getting involved, because these are, you know, problems like security and privacy are things that that resonate with a lot of people, and a lot of people want to help and get involved. And so we created the organization to give women those resources and that opportunity to join.
That's really interesting perspective. So we're here at RSA this year. So with that as a kind of the theme, with that as a backdrop, are you seeing just the face of RSA and security in general changing, and how and why is that important? I'd love to get your perspective on that.
Sure. So one of the things that I've noticed this year at RSA in particular, and I can't say that I've seen this so much on the show floor, but one of the great things about RSA in general is the community that it brings, and that everybody is here in San Francisco all at once, making connections, forging relationships. And so there are a lot of events, kind of side events that happen because we're all here at the same time. And so you're able to see smaller groups of people meet because they are working on a similar problem together, or because they are attracted to solving the same issues and helping people in similar ways. And what I've seen at some of those surrounding events is more and more people from outside of the traditional InfoSec community coming on board and bringing new perspectives and expertise with them. So disciplines like psychology, behavioral science, neurobiology, a lot of things that are less about the technology and more about the people. We've seen some of this at specific companies. Google's actually a really good example, where they've done a lot of user testing in terms of how do people respond to security warnings. Having too many of them and having them when they're unclear is really hard to get people to understand what you're trying to communicate to them, and then also motivate them to take the steps and the behavior that you hope they will see, that they will do. And so there's definitely more in the surrounding community here this week, more of those types of people who are coming together to say, I'm not an engineer, but I know how to help solve this problem because, you know, we've been working on it in other disciplines and other fields.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. So I've been coming to RSA for longer than I want to admit, and it's just every year there's more and more people, and it's not just the number of people, but the actual composition of those people are changing dramatically. I think what I think you struck on a really important point is that when people are bombarded by the same messaging, right, they get desensitized to it. And you know, this whole notion about security being all about fear and foreboding and that whole fear, uncertainty, doubt factor, it kind of turns people away from it. So what do you think, you know, with this kind of new composition of people coming in, how's that going to change the face of security? And is it actually going to, at the end of the day, make things better, and how?
Yeah, so I'm actually really excited about the future of security for that reason, with this integration of people from other fields and disciplines, because I think what it does is it removes a lot of the mysticism and magic from the way that we've traditionally talked about security, and it forces people to be a lot more transparent and a lot more logical in the way that we think about security. And so, you know, sometimes as an industry, I like to tell people, if people believe that you're a wizard and they don't understand what you do, it may make you feel very valued, but it actually, they don't value you because they don't understand what you do. And so I think having all of these disciplines come together is forcing us to change the way that we communicate to people about security. I think it's good for consumers who are going to get better communication from the companies who provide services and products for them. I think it's better for internal security teams who are learning how to better communicate with their internal stakeholders and business leaders. And I think it's good for society at large. I think one of the negative consequences of some of this fear-based communication is that when you've sufficiently scared people, they make poor decisions. Right. And that's actually how we end up with really poor laws and regulation in this space as well, because, you know, this, we've sufficiently freaked out society and they're distracted and not focusing on the right things.
No, that's a really good point. So one thing that we've seen that's really interesting too is that security for too long has been synonymous with friction and getting in the way and not being something, you know, for example, if something's encrypted or I have to enter my a password and then another factor for authentication, it seems like it's like so many steps to get in from here to what I'm trying to do when I'm trying to do my job or access, you know, do whatever it is. And maybe you could comment for a second on how do you think that equation is going to change overall, not just in removing friction to make security easier. Do you ever think, to your point earlier, that security can be viewed in a much more positive sense as instead of instilling fear and doubt, but as a enabler, you know, for other things? Are you seeing that kind of happen in the security products or teams that you've seen? Like, what do you think that shift will ever happen?
I do actually, and I've seen it happen. I think the most modern security teams are actually now looking at their responsibility in their companies as enabling new business opportunities, building a trusted foundation so that businesses can move really quickly and try new things and innovate. And that's not possible if people are scared of technology, if we can't give them that trusted foundation. And so I think the best security teams and the smartest security teams are already thinking that way. How can I contribute to not only the technological health of the company, but the financial health, right? By making those business opportunities possible.
Excellent point. So let me ask you this also. If we fast forward a year from now, and then maybe 5 years from now, and just getting maybe a little bit more, taking a crystal ball out and looking, what do you think we'll be talking about next year and in 5 years? Do you think we'll be still in a world where the problem's getting worse in terms of the number of breaches, the frequency, the implications? Will it be getting better? This last year was the first year that we actually saw cybersecurity play into the, into an election, correct?
Right.
And having such, dramatic effects. Do you think it's going to get better in a year? Do you think it's going to take 5 years? Do you think it's going to 10? I know it's maybe an unfair question, but...
So I hope at least a year from now, maybe it will take 5 years, but I hope at least this time next year, we're having more conversations of less about the specific attack or breach, but the change that we're seeing in society and culture in terms of how people are viewing these incidences. It should not feel like the end of the world if a social media account is compromised, right? Can we actually get to a point where people have their personal incident response plan and, losing a password for an account feels like I just lost my credit card and I'm just going to call and cancel it and I'll move on. So there are parts of security in our daily lives that we've somehow become comfortable with, right? Losing my wallet at a restaurant, it's frustrating, it's inconvenient, it's annoying, but I'm calling and canceling cards.
Sure.
But, if there's an online account that's compromised today, it's a big headline. It's, news everywhere. And I think we need to get people to the point where they're comfortable enough with this new normal that they don't freak out every time. Because, again, that fear is where it makes it really difficult for them to make smart, logical decisions about what to do next.
Coupled with that, too, the other side of security, the flip side of it, or closely coupled to it, is the notion of privacy. Right. So how do you see the people's views in the last couple of years and going forward changing with respect to privacy? Do they have a lot? Are they have a lot less expectation of it? Are they just kind of saying, hey, I'm still going to put stuff out there, but I know that it can be compromised? Are they surrendering the idea of privacy or the absoluteness of it?
So what I've actually seen is not that people are surrendering the expectation of privacy or giving up on it completely. They just want control over it so that they have a choice on when to share, when not to share, and transparency about, what is actually out there, right, and how it's being used. And so I think the notion of transparency and control is really the future of where the conversation on privacy is going.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because I think people know that their data is much more and their information is much more at risk than they think about it now. But yet, people still tend to they'll share their everyday lives. And you know, one thing that we've seen too is that this last couple of years with all these debates around encryption and all those other pieces is that the notion that that people now literally have both a physical existence and a digital existence, and they're still, even though they know that that footprint is out there on both sides, still viewed as differently. So, you know, for example, last year when we were talking about the encryption debate with Apple, and the government wanting like a backdoor key to mm-hmm. like all the information that was there, there was a debate over it. But if you just frame the conversation in the sense of saying, hey, the government, let's say you lived in New York City in Manhattan, the government said, I want a skeleton key to every single, apartment, that's in Manhattan, people would never, never think to do that. So I'm curious to know is that, do you think that people, like, and when it comes to their privacy versus their protection, where do you see that, if you can, about that evolving? Are people willing to surrender their privacy for this notion of protection, or at least the specter of it, being better?
So I actually think part of the reason why sometimes people will make that trade-off has a lot to do with the fear factor and the way that things are communicated to them. Mm-hmm. That debate of, do I want security and protection or do I want privacy? Sometimes that's a false dichotomy. And so I think being mindful of that and helping people, again, understand what's actually at stake, what the real risks are in a way that they can actually understand and consume is going to be really important in helping them make personal choices about when does that trade-off actually exist and which option do they want.
Well, that was really wonderful. So thank you so much for taking the time and giving a perspective on it. It's obviously something you think about a lot.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for listening. For vital information security news, visit us at www.helpnetsecurity.com.